stand, divided we fall. For every dime they give us, a battle must be fought. So working people, use your power, the key to liberty. Don't support that rich man's style of luxury.
And there ain't no way they can ever keep us down, oh no. Ain't no way they can ever keep us down.
We won't be bought, we won't be sold to be treated right. Well, that's our goal.
And there ain't no way they can ever keep us down.
We've been jailed, Lord, it's a sin. Women and little children stood right by the men. But we've got a union contract that keeps the worker free. And I'll never shoot that union out of me.
They'll never shoot that union out of me, oh no. Never shoot that union out of me.
Got a contract in our hand signed by the blood of honest men.
And they'll never shoot that union.
Well, the power wheel is a rolling, rolling right along, and the government helps keep it going, going strong. So working people, get your help from your
Free Media, AshevilleFM.org. Welcome to The Final Straw. I'm your host, Burst of Goodness. The Final Straw is also available at KXCF, Marshall, California. The Final Straw is brought to you by Firestorm Cafe and Books, a worker-owned cooperative in downtown Asheville at 48 Commerce Street, featuring all-organic coffee and milks, homemade baked goods, vegan sandwiches, alternative literature, and community events. Check out the calendar of events at www.firestormcafe.com. This week, we'll be speaking with members of the Seattle Solidarity Network, or CSOL for short. According to their website, quote, Seattle Solidarity, or CSOL, is a volunteer network of working people who believe in standing up for our rights. Our goal is to support our fellow workers' strikes and struggles, build solidarity, and organize to deal with specific job, housing, and other problems caused by the greed of the rich and powerful. Join us. Let's fight to win. We'll be speaking with Emily and Lee right after this musical break. Welcome back to The Final Straw. We're speaking with Lee and Emily of the Seattle Solidarity Network. Emily and Lee, what can you tell me about the organization?
What can we tell you about CSOL? Okay. Well, it's a fairly small organization, a little over 100 members now, maybe 150 members. We have a phone tree of 250 or so. I've been going for about 3 years. It's all volunteer.
Almost 4 years.
Almost 4 years now. Wow. It's all volunteer, workers and tenants mutual support organization. So the idea is if Emily has a problem with her employer, say, like she's not getting paid what she's owed, something like that, then I and you know a bunch of other people in the organization will come together to support her. And help to fight her boss until she gets what she's owed. If my landlord, say, won't fix the heat, then Emily will come out together with other people and support me and try to fight for me to get what I need. So it's mutual support like that. Of course, new people come to us with problems, and we will often take on the fight of somebody that wasn't already in the organization, but they will have to agree to become a member at that point and commit to supporting other workers and tenants. We've done about, I would say, about 25 of these fights against employers and landlords since we started. They're usually over fairly small things, like a few hundred dollars of deposit money from a landlord or some unpaid wages, sometimes other things like demanding that they stop a lawsuit against a worker or stop trying to collect money that we don't think is legitimate debt. But yeah, we usually win. We've probably won about 20 of those.
Wow. You know?
Partly because if we don't think there's any chance of winning, we won't bother. We try to take on fights that we have at least some chance of winning.
Yeah, so there's a very informative video that's up on YouTube, or I guess two-part video that talks about some of your organizing strategies and how you, like you were saying, like if you don't think you can actually win a struggle, you won't necessarily engage in it, or you'll find a way to more effectively engage in it. And those videos are very, very informative and inspiring. But besides the campaigns that are listed there, can you talk a little bit about more recent campaigns that don't appear in the video? Is anything going on right now?
Well, one campaign we have going on right now is against a large housing. It's basically a huge landlord. It's a corporate landlord that owns apartment buildings in a lot of different U.S. cities. And they are currently screwing over a woman in CSOL named Annalise. She lived in one of their units a couple of years ago, and she was getting some kind of a housing subsidy, which then got cut off, and she wasn't going to be able to keep paying her rent. So eventually she got evicted, and their collections goons have been coming after her for the money that they say she owed. She agreed to an installment plan. She's been paying $200 a month for a long time, and she's now paid more than enough to cover all the rent for the time that she lived there, but they're saying that she has to keep paying because she has to compensate them for all the time after they evicted her before they found a new tenant, which we think is bullish. They're a huge, wealthy corporation, and she can't afford that, and she doesn't know that. So our demand is pretty simple. It's just back off, leave her alone, cancel the debt that they are claiming that she owes. And we've been doing that for about, what,
six
a month?
Weeks? Yeah.
A little over a month?
Yeah.
It's going well. It seems like they're maybe about to give in.
Yeah, the main guy responsible for this area keeps setting himself deadlines for when he's going to give her a letter saying she doesn't owe the money, and then he keeps failing to make his own deadlines, so the campaign goes on.
It's almost like he thinks he can stall us and make us back off by telling us he's about to give in.
Yeah, it's very strange. But anyway, we just kept going, and we had an action today.
Oops. Yeah, the stall tactics don't really work on us because we don't stop taking action until the fight has actually been resolved, not just because we don't stop just because they tell us they want to talk or, you know, they say they're going to.
How have you presented the demands of, I assume the demands are of Annalise, but you're collectively voicing Annalise's right. desires. How have you been presenting those demands?
So
were you there?
Yeah, I was there.
Yeah.
So, as with all our fights, we started in this fight with a demand delivery action. And that is a group basically march on the boss or march on the landlord, where we get together as many people as possible. We got together a bunch of people with Annalise, and we went down to the corporate headquarters in Seattle of this company. And we probably had about almost 30 people.
At least 30.
Yeah.
It was the middle of a day on a weekday, so it's hard to get a huge crowd, but yeah, we got about 30.
That's a pretty imposing force, though.
Yeah, especially in a kind of a small office.
Yeah, we definitely crowded their lobby, that's for sure. And so we all marched into their lobby and stood there and demanded to speak with Tom Daniels, who is the guy who is the executive who we decided was most responsible for and able to resolve the situation. And yeah, so we basically tried to deliver this letter, this demand letter to Tom Daniels saying, you guys need to back off on Annalise or we'll take further action. And yeah, the receptionist gave us the runaround and yeah, basically we think he was there, but we think he was too scared to come out and meet us. So that's how the action went. We think he poked his head around the corner and then like scurried away.
There were a lot of like office manager types looking freaked out and scurrying around.
Yeah.
So yeah. We stood there for a long time actually. And it was very weird. It was a very awkward and hopefully intimidating presence where we, a whole bunch of people standing there silently giving them the stink eye. But, in the end, of course, he got the message, even if he wouldn't show his face at that moment. And then we waited a couple weeks. I think we said we'd give them 1 week or 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Their response after a few days was an angry letter saying she owes the money and she better pay up or we're going to take it to collections.
Was that directed towards Seesaw or towards Annalise?
I think it was sent to both. I think it was sent to her directly and to the organization. So that was just we took that as a big screw you. And so we started in. The next thing we did was to kind of a standard tactic we use against large landlords was to find all the buildings that they have vacancies that they're trying to fill and to put up lots of posters all around the entrances. Basically warning people not to rent from them and giving examples of the scummy things they've done to people. And with a little thing in the corner of explaining, I think it says, this company is currently persecuting former tenant Annalise. You could be next, or something like that. So just so that they know. So when their management sees it, they'll understand why these posters are going up everywhere.
Yeah, and if they end up getting a bunch of questions from people about, like, who's this Annalise person? That's going to be extra pressure, I guess.
Yeah. And it does make it harder for them. I mean, you know, if you saw that, if you were trying to rent a place and you saw that next to the place you were checking out, you would think twice. So we did a fair amount of that. There's also been, I believe, two actions now at events where this boss guy, Tom Daniels, was appearing, like associations that they participate in. One was a chili cook-off, I think it was the Association of Multi-Family Landlords or something like that. So basically just starting to personally embarrass him a bit as well. And so that has led to them changing their tune, calling for a meeting. We agreed, Annalise and a couple other CSL people went in to meet with him, and he basically said, I'm going to give you what you want. But I have to talk to my lawyers first, something like that. So we're like, okay, we're waiting. But he still hasn't given in, so we're still fighting them.
And thus the stall tactics.
We don't know.
He may just be slow. He may be trying to stall us, but it isn't working because we're obviously still taking action.
Yeah. So we don't like have a truce during some sort of negotiation or whatever. We keep going with the pressure tactics until the situation is fixed.
I was going to say another more recent fight that's not mentioned in the video that was a pretty fun one was against Chase. Chase Bank, where one of our members, who had already been a member for about a year, actually, Neftali got about $1,000, got ripped off about $1,000 on a change. It just was missing from the envelope they gave him. And that went on for 2, maybe 3 months. We targeted the local branch, and then we increased the pressure. Then we started personally targeting the manager of the local branch. Then we started going up to the whole, you know, the region, basically, and picketing multiple branches, mm-hmm. warning people to count their money if they did business at these places, and then going to basically personally embarrassing some management people. And that we did a lot of actions in that fight. It was, for a lot of people were wondering whether we would ever be able to move Chase because they're just so huge and they're known for not caring. You know, they're known for just stonewalling complaints.
Yeah.
But they did finally give in. The regional, like, district manager or something like that called us in for a meeting and said how horrible it was that we were personally embarrassing their managers.
Aww.
And that was, yeah, it caused so much trauma for them. And that was why, it basically told us that was why he was giving in.
That sounds,
and then,
like,
he handed over the check.
Yeah. Yep.
That sounds like a success. It's great.
Yeah, that was pretty exciting. I mean, it was a small fight, but it was against such a big enemy.
Have you all faced any difficulties with law enforcement at this point for organizing together and taking nonviolent direct action?
It depends what you mean by difficulties. The cops get called at almost every action that we have. But we are pretty careful to stay within our First Amendment protected rights. So far, we haven't had any, you know, we haven't had any arrested actions. We haven't had any police beating people up or, you know, the usual kinds of things so far.
We've had a lot of threats of arrest.
Yeah.
But we haven't been in a situation where they've actually gone ahead and arrested people at one of our actions. We basically haven't. Seesaw operates totally in the open, so we don't engage in really extremely illegal tactics in the name of Seesaw. We sometimes there's a gray area. We'll, you know, maybe a little bit of minor trespassing or, noise ordinance violations and that sort of thing, but nothing to the point where the police have felt that it was worth the drama of arresting people. And it seems like the more people we have at an action, the less hassle we get from the cops as well.
Yeah. Recently, we did actually have a big landlady, actually, send in her boyfriend to provoke violence on a picket line. And he then went, he failed to provoke violence on our picket line, but went and filed, an assault charge with the police anyway. But in that case, the police were not too convinced. And
yeah, the guy actually showed up at our picket with a van load of cops waiting, like a block away. And then he started going up to every guy on the picket line.
Yeah, just the men.
And just getting in people's faces, getting like an inch away from our faces and yelling, "You're a motherfucker," or, you know, things like that. And just trying to get someone to hit him so that he could get the cops to come. Mm-hmm. But there were some close calls, but we managed to not fall for it.
But some of the tactic of focusing on an individual CEO or individual figure kind of makes me think of like house demos that animal rights organizations would do, and they've been like accused of stalking or accused of other things by the FBI.
Mm-hmm. We haven't yet been accused of stalking. We do definitely think that it's perfectly legal, I think. And
as far as we're concerned, everything we do is within our rights.
Yeah, exactly. And it's good to target, you know, target bad bosses and landlords with their neighbors and in their neighborhoods as well. So,
yeah, we've gotten anti-harassment orders, like restraining order type things. In one case, one of those was successful against one of our people, but it wasn't really a big deal. We got the judge to make an exception for First Amendment for picketing, basically. He said, oh, you can't go near this guy except for picketing purposes. So okay, that's
no problem.
Reason
which is the person they'd be there. Yeah, the reason. Yeah, that's funny.
I don't know. It is going to their neighborhoods and being outside their houses is the thing that upsets people the most, it seems. So we try to be strategic about when we do that. Because if we do that at the very beginning of a fight, say, then it might just piss them off so much that it'll make them never want to give in. So we try to, we believe in escalation. We usually start out by targeting the business or the institution, and then if we go on and on and that isn't having an effect, then we might escalate and start throwing in some more personal tactics, right? So, I mean, we've had cops actually tell us that we shouldn't have gone to someone's house, or you know, that's out of bounds or whatever, and then we try to clarify, but wait, but it isn't illegal, and they're like, no, well, it's not illegal, but still, you shouldn't do it. Like, whatever. They like to lecture us about how we ought to handle things.
So, some of CSAL's message and activity seems reminiscent to me of the Ontario Coalition Against Poverty, or OCAP, in terms of OCAP's advocacy for and with the poor and its use of direct action. And it also kind of reminds me of the Industrial Workers of the World in the project's focus on workers' rights and direct solidarity and mutual aid under the motto of an injury to one is an injury to all. Can you talk about these groups' influence on CSAL and other sources of inspiration for your group?
Well, certainly OCAP was a source of inspiration for the people who founded CSAL, and all five of them were members of the IWW. So it's no coincidence that those two organizations ring a bell.
Yeah, I mean, it is kind of what we're about. You could think of it as a blend of the direct action casework of OCAP and the solidarity unionism of the IWW. I personally had been exposed a little bit to OCAP in the past, and I was never like an active participant in OCAP because I never lived in Ontario, but I went to a couple speaking events of theirs, and I went to one large action that they organized in Toronto a couple of years before we started CSAL. So that was an inspiration, yeah, and IWW, like she said, yeah, both of us are currently members of the IWW as well. There's a lot of overlap between the IWW and CSAL in Seattle. So, yeah, no secret that's a major influence.
What suggestions... Oh, were you saying something? Sorry.
Nope. Okay. I think it was a baby.
Hello.
So, yeah, I wanted to say, if the squeaks you hear, that's our four-week-old daughter.
She's sleeping away nicely at the moment.
They're barely registering on my end, so
no. Okay.
What suggestions do you have to other organizations around the world that might want to start a chapter of a complementary organization?
Well, there is a document that's been made into a pamphlet called "So You Want to Start a Solidarity Network" that a couple of CSAL organizers wrote, which I would recommend. You can find that on libcom.org. I would also say contact us, info@csal.net. We always like to hear from people that are starting similar projects. But the main advice would be just go ahead and do it. I mean, if you've got a few people that are on the same page about what they want to do, just go ahead and start. One of the beauties of the Solidarity Network is that you can start it with very little. It takes a lot to keep it going and to build it up, but it's something that a few activists, if they're committed, can really do. I mean, that's one of the reasons why we decided to start it in the first place, is that why we thought about doing something like this in the first place is, in the IWW, we were at a point where we were having trouble doing successful workplace, like union organizing efforts, because we were just too weak in terms of numbers of people that have and training and skills and commitment to make that happen. So we thought, you know, starting a solidarity network would help us to build up our numbers, build up our experience, our skills and everything to the point where we'd be able to do more. Partly because it can bring people together. You know, if we all work in different industries, say, we can organize all together as a team. Whereas, you know, if we were trying to do union organizing efforts, we'd each be on our own.
Would you say that CSOL has been effective at bridging racial and ethnic gaps in your work or through your work in your communities? If so, how? If not, what's hampered it, and how are you all tackling those issues?
Well, I would say yes and no. We have managed to get to the point where our active membership is definitely multiracial. We have most of our actions, we've got, you know, at least they're not all white, let me put it that way. Our most active core, which we call our organizing committee, those are the people that are the most committed, who agree that they're going to come to every meeting every week, and they're the ones that make the phone calls when we have to mobilize and everything, you know, all that stuff. That is still, at the moment, that's all white. It hasn't always been, actually, but it's pretty much, that's pretty much how it's been. On the whole, as an organization, we've gradually become more and more racially diverse, but there's still a long way to go. And I think probably, I mean, on one level, the kind of organizing we're doing is good in terms of bridging that, in terms of getting a diverse group together, because we're always encountering new people, many of whom are immigrants or Native American or Black or whatever. And it's not if somebody has an employer or landlord conflict and is coming to us for support, racial differences are rarely much of an issue. It's usually, you know, it usually works pretty well. But I guess our most active core has generally been people with pre-existing ideological commitments. It's basically mostly been anarchists who are, 20 to 30 years old. And that's just a demographic that's almost all white, at least in Seattle. That's pretty much what we've had to draw from for our most committed core people who are willing to put huge amounts of time into this. It seems to be who's willing to do it at that level so far. Although that's started to change in terms of age as well. We've started to get a few older activists becoming highly committed and highly active.
Mm-hmm. It definitely seems like your methods are created in such a way that people will like. It's the kind of thing that can cross all sort of boundaries, and it's so easily reproducible that even if people don't per se join CSOL, anyone could create an organization that they would feel more comfortable with that would use the same sort of means and affect the same change. It's pretty powerful.
Yeah. Yeah, although I mean it's not easy. It's a lot of work. But yeah, I don't think I'm not sure. This is sort of speculation, but I don't think the fact that we're mostly a white organization keeps non-white people from wanting to join, actually. I think it's more a question of what kind of people will be willing to put in the huge amount of effort that it takes to be at the most active level of the organization. And that is usually people with an ideological commitment. So the people who would be ideologically disposed to see CSOL as contributing to their long-term goals, let's say, are mostly going to be anarchists I mean, that's basically people that believe in class struggle and believe in doing it in a sort of totally grassroots, directly democratic way, using direct action and so on, who are committed activists politically, and with that orientation. And if those are the people you have to draw from for those roles, for the most active roles, at least in Seattle, but that's mostly, at the moment, that's mostly white people. And hopefully that will change.
It seems like there's room for a lot of levels of activity around the organization and not just in that core.
Yeah. Right. And it has been very exciting over the past 4 years to see the diversity grow in terms of age diversity, gender diversity, as well as racial and ethnic diversity in terms of involvement in actions and, you know, all the sorts of things that we do.
And then, you know, our hope is that we can continue to kind of pull, you know, from the people that are at the levels of commitment where, from the people who are participating at the level of being someone that comes out to an action when they get a call, you know, once a month or so, that we can continue to gradually pull people in. Not everyone is going to want to be at the highest level of activity, but you know, over time, some of those people move up and become more active. We've seen some of that, and if, you know, hopefully through that process, we'll get to the point where the most active core is also more diverse. Part of that is training too. We do training events a few times a year, which is usually a time when people from those, basically the sort of rank and file membership folks, start to step up and get active in the organizing.
We'll continue our conversation with Emily and Lee of the Seattle Solidarity Network right after this musical break. Welcome back to The Final Straw. We're speaking with Lee and Emily of the Seattle Solidarity Network. So in what I was reading about OCAP earlier, it seemed that some more mainstream unions and progressive organizations had found issues with the organization, which seems like a more centralized group dealing with more specific legal knowledge and specialized knowledge than CSOL is. Have you been seen to be considered more radical or aggressive than other mutual aid or support organizations in your area?
Yeah, I think we're not really on the radar of quite a few of the mainstream unions. We've had a few staffers from mainstream unions get excited about us and want to try and involve their members in our actions, that sort of thing. But otherwise, yeah.
Yeah, we haven't really had a lot of problems with. I mean, we've definitely had some friction on occasion with sort of more established or establishment left or labor organizations. When we were first getting started, we tried to line up support from the local Jobs with Justice chapter, and that was a little bit rocky because some of the leaders of that just took a dim view to what we were doing. but as time went on, that's changed, and they've kind of accepted us more. We basically had to prove ourselves, you know.
Yeah, as we've been able to win fights and just keep doing what we're doing, then more established people in the left in Seattle have come to respect us, I think. We did have a fight somewhat recently where a worker actually was part of a mainstream union who failed to enforce his contract. And so we ended up taking on his fight when his union wouldn't handle his situation as a grievance. So that was
interesting. Yeah, that led to some conflict. It was like we tried to play it like we and the union were on the same side, but we knew on one level that they were kind of ready to sell him out. So we had to tread carefully, not take them for granted. But yeah, I mean, actually, on the whole, I'd say we've gotten a fair amount of respect from folks on the left and in unions, union leaders and stuff in the last year or two, although a lot of them still probably haven't heard of us. But actually one fight we're engaged in right now is causing a little bit of strain between us and some of the sort of establishment liberals in Seattle. And there's a lot of them. We are currently in a battle with the Low Income Housing Institute, which is a pseudo-progressive nonprofit that was started in the early 90s by, I think, some sincere housing activists, which then, within a few years, became totally corporatized. And, you know, its board consists of people from big banks and stuff. But anyway, it's basically around screwing over extremely low-income tenants and charging bogus fees. And, you know, we're the guy, one of the tenants came to us and had a very compelling story and was, you know, we were they're just trying to come after him for a pretty small amount of money, like $100 or so. It was, I think, $150 is the total amount at issue. So not a big deal, but a big deal for him. He's currently living in a shelter. And there was just no legitimate basis for it. So we're taking on his fight. We're helping him out. We're defending him. And we've gotten contacted by a lot of sort of, I don't know, what would you call it? Like establishment liberal types who mm-hmm. say, well, I think CSOL is great, but you shouldn't be messing with this nonprofit because, you know, you should just leave them alone because we're all on the same side.
You know? Right. Like, you should go fight the real bad guys. Yeah. They say.
Is that the Sharon Lee from the Leahy?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
We've had
some people say, oh, you shouldn't be messing with Sharon Lee, you know, and Sharon Lee herself has said to us, oh, we're really on the same side. We should be on the same side. Right.
Yeah.
Like, you know, come on over.
Yeah. That was the same week that they threatened to sue this currently homeless guy and us.
It's so totally despicable. I mean,
yeah. And it was her boyfriend who came and tried to provoke violence on the picket line. So good times.
Yeah. So we don't care what kind of lefty veneer they have. You know, if they're actively screwing over workers and tenants, then they're not immune.
So it seems like a lot of your organizing has been focused on workers with contracts. What about non-contract workers, like sex workers or undocumented workers? Has CSAL been invited into any of these struggles?
Actually, we haven't really done a whole lot with workers with contracts. Most people in CSAL and most CSAL fights have been involved workers, non-union workers.
I guess I should rephrase. What I meant was workers whose activities while they're at work are considered legal.
I see.
As opposed to sex workers or undocumented workers. I mean, depending on what the sex worker's doing.
Well, we've had a fair amount of involvement with undocumented workers. We haven't yet done anything involving sex workers that I can think of. I think maybe there was some, we were contacted at one point by some people, sex workers that were interested in organizing, but that fell through for one reason or another. I think the people that were taking the lead just changed their mind or something. But undocumented workers, definitely, we've had at least a couple fights involving undocumented workers. It hasn't been a major issue because with undocumented workers, it's usually wage theft that we're dealing with. That's the official term for it. I don't know. I mean, it becomes an issue if the workers are scared because they're undocumented, or when the employer threatens them, like, I'm going to call immigration on you. Get that sort of thing, but basically we take it on like any other fight, and we just try to make sure that the employer doesn't know where they live. It's the main thing about staying safe.
So just because everyone is talking about the Occupy movement right now in the media, at whether positively or negatively, what can you say about? Do you think that CSAL has any implications, like wider implications, because it's such a catchy model? I mean, obviously, you've been doing it for 4 years. You've had 20 successes out of 25. It's been a lot of work for people to put in. But how could, or do you think that CSAL could sort of integrate or be integrated into some of these struggles or some of the methods of CSAL, some of the Occupy movements in different cities to sort of materialize the protest in the way that maybe like opening up squats would also materialize the Occupy protests?
Actually, Emily and I have unfortunately not been able to participate a whole lot with Occupy because our baby was born right around the time when it started.
Congratulations also.
Let's do one. Thanks.
Thank you.
We went to one of the early actions of the Occupy Seattle right before she was born. But then we've been kind of, somewhat out of commission, not able to do as much since then. But a lot of our members have been involved in Seattle and Occupy. We don't yet, like CSAL doesn't yet have like any concerted effort to undertake projects within Occupy, although we've done a few things like try to round up people from Occupy Seattle for our actions some of our members did a teach-in related to CSAL at Occupy Seattle. We're maybe going to do an organizing skills training for people at Occupy. But I've been seeing in the media, like around the country, there's seems to be a lot of examples of people at the different Occupies doing the kind of things that CSAL would do, like trying to stop an eviction, confronting landlords and bosses. So I think it's a great idea. I don't know. What I'm thinking is it occupies a great opportunity. Like some of the big political stuff, some of the, having mass demonstrations, for example, confronting bankers and politicians in a big way is something that the Occupy movement makes possible just because of its size and popularity and visibility. It can do things that CSAL can't do, because we're too small. So I wouldn't want to reduce Occupy to just a larger version of a solidarity network, because it actually has bigger potential. But on the other hand, it's not likely to last as long. These big explosions of popular activity come and go. When this current explosion is starting to dissipate. Hopefully some of the people that got active and inspired through the Occupy movement will be able to stay plugged in through Solidarity Networks as well, so that we'll be stronger next time.
Has CSOL taken any actions against police or politicians as an organization, and would it? Is that in the nature of the organization to try to make demands of police or politicians?
I think we would if and when we thought we could win that fight. We haven't yet, you know, specifically targeted police or politicians.
Only indirect. I mean, the only time we've targeted politicians has been to try and pressure them to try and, you know, if we're fighting a company, like we were fighting a big developer a couple of years ago. And so we would go try to basically pressure politicians not to award contracts, development contracts, to this one company, for example. But in terms of actually doing fights against politicians and police, yeah, it just depends on whether it's feasible. When it comes to police especially, I think we need a lot of people to be able to do that successfully. I don't think you can just do like the kind of, I don't think our standard CSOL campaign will work very well against the police. I think to successfully take on the police, you need a lot of people out there.
So what other new developments do you want the listeners to know about with CSOL?
I don't know. I guess one of the most exciting things recently for us has been in CSOL has just been the formation of all these other solidarity networks around the country and around the world. So that's been really cool. We've been getting contacted by people all over the place saying that they're doing something similar and wanting to compare notes about that and ask questions about our experience and stuff like that. So that's pretty recent. I mean, for the first 2 years, we were pretty much doing this on our own. There weren't any other ones out there, and now it's really spreading. Also, we're at some point, I mean, like we kind of mentioned already, the current things that CSOL does in terms of taking on fights for fairly small demands, usually in support of one individual tenant or worker, often somebody that is fighting their former landlord or their former boss, which makes it easier because, you know, not in danger of being fired or evicted. That's mostly what we've been able to do up to now. That's not all that we want to do, though. I mean, it's really just a start. We see this as just a start. And we want to build up to the point where we have the strength in terms of the number of supporters and the number of organizers who really know what they're doing and are committed to the point where we can expand and do successful on the job organizing, carrying out, being able to organize strikes, for example, being able to organize large demonstrations, coalitions, like you said, being able to take on politicians and cops and all that stuff. So, you know, just because you see us doing one thing right now doesn't mean that that's the limit to what we want to do.
Yeah, I asked that question because I was kind of I was unsure as to if that even. If focusing on a politician to change their, I mean, if you're working with an individual who has a complaint and they have a complaint against a specific politician, it seems like unless it's somebody that person did out of like to that person, as opposed to policies that they're enacting, I wondered if that would even fall under the purview of the kind of work that Seattle Solidarity would do.
Well, I don't know. I mean, you know, if we're up against a politician, it's probably going to be for some sort of like community issue rather than just an individual issue, right? It's probably going to be bridges being torn down or bus routes are being cut or, you know, something, schools are being closed or that sort of thing. But yeah, that's definitely not out of bounds for us. It's just that we don't want to screw around. We don't want to do a half-assed job. We don't want to launch into something like that and not really be able to carry it through. We want to do it only if we have a realistic sense that we're going to be able to do it and an understanding of how we're going to do it and who's going to do the work and, you know, and make sure that we're going to do it well and hopefully be successful at it. We don't want to just you know, annoy some politicians. We want to kick their asses, you know.
And you mentioned other chapters opening up. Can you list off any of the cities that or places that have chapters of Solidarity Networks that are inspired or related to CSOL?
Well, they do come and go. I mean, I always assume for each one that starts, for every four that starts, maybe one will last more than a few months. The ones that don't make it sometimes start up again, though.
Yeah. But, so right now, there's Santa Cruz, San Diego, Modesto. These are all California.
San Francisco and East Bay.
Right.
Portland is just getting started the second time around.
Olympia's getting started the second time around.
Third time or
second?
I think second, yeah. So that's the West Coast. We may be forgetting one or two.
Yeah. We've gotten contacted by people in Texas, Kentucky. There's Atlanta. Solidarity.
Atlanta is going strong.
Yeah, they're doing great.
I think there's an attempt in Baltimore, but I'm not totally sure about that. There has been one in Rhode Island. I don't know if that's still functional. There's definitely one in Boston.
There was something in New York.
Yeah, I don't know if that's still going. Bunch of them in the U.S., basically.
And then a New Zealand, well, something in Australia, something in Glasgow, Scotland.
Yeah. And then we've been hearing talk. I mean, that's the English-speaking world, pretty much. We've started to hear from people in Spain, but I'm not sure what the status of that is. We had some random guy that we've never met before, or never heard of, contacted us from a town in Spain saying that he had just translated our how-to guide into Spanish and was distributing it in Spain. Yeah, someone in Poland also.
Wow, that's great.
That's
so we've been speaking with Emily and Lee from the Seattle Solidarity Network. Thank you so much for the good work and for talking with us.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
You can find out more about Seattle Solidarity at www.seasol.net. You've been listening to The Final Straw, Asheville Free Media, ashevillefm.org, and I'm your host, Bruce the Goodness. The Final Straw is also available at KXCF. Marshall, California. The Final Straw is brought to you by Firestorm Cafe and Books, a worker-owned cooperative in downtown Asheville at 48 Commerce Street, featuring all organic coffee and milks, homemade baked goods, vegan sandwiches, alternative literature, and community events. Check out the calendar of events at www.firestormcafe.com. Have a great week.
Would you have freedom from wage slavery? Then come join the grand industrial band. Would you from misery and hunger be free? Come on, do your share, lend a hand. There is power, there is power in a band of working folks when they stand hand in hand. That's the power, that's the power that was ruling every land. One industrial union brand.
Would you have mansions of gold in the sky and live in a shack way in the back? Would you have wings up in heaven to fly and stay here with rags on your back?
There is power in a band of working folks when they stand hand in hand. That's the power that was ruling every land. One industrial union brand.
If you've had enough of the blood of the lamb, then come join the grand industrial band. If for a change you'd have eggs and ham, come on, do your share, lend a hand.
There is power in a band of working folks when they stand.
Sluggers to beat on your heads, then don't organize, all unions despise. If you'd have nothing before you're dead, shake hands with your boss and look wise.
There is power in a band of working folks. When they stand hand in hand, there's a power, that's a power that must rule in every land. One industrial union brand.
Come all you workers from every land, come joining the grand industrial band. Then we our share of this earth shall demand. Come on, do your share, lend a hand.
There is power in a band of working folks. When they stand hand in hand, that's the power that must rule in every land. For industrial union brand.
All right.
La huelga, compañeros, no vayáis a trabajar. Dejar quieta la herramienta, que es la hora de luchar. A la huelga 10, a la huelga 100, a la huelga, madre, yo voy también. A la huelga 100, a la huelga 1000, yo por ellos, madre, y ellos por mí. Contra el gobierno del hambre nos vamos a levantar. Todos los trabajadores, codo a codo por el pan. A la huelga 10, a la huelga 100, a la huelga, madre, yo voy también. A la huelga 100, a la huelga 1000, yo por ellos, madre, y ellos por mí. Desde el Pozo y la Besana, desde el Torno y el Telar, ya van los hombres del pueblo a la huelga general. A la huelga 10, a la huelga 100, a la huelga, madre, yo voy también. A la huelga 100, a la huelga 1000, yo por ellos, madre, y ellos por mí. Todos los pueblos del mundo la mano nos van a dar para devolver a España su perdida libertad. A la huelga 10, a la huelga 100, a la huelga, madre, yo voy también. A la huelga 100, a la huelga 1000, yo por ellos, madre, y ellos por mí.
It's 3 o'clock, and you're listening to In the Drift on Asheville FM.